Hello, everybody. I am William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where I talk on the intersectionality on sports, culture, and politics. This isn't your typical sports show. It's a show where you learn and understand how progressives use culture, including sports, to continue to take our rights and slowly denigrate or disintegrate our values. So tonight's episode, Ryan Clark denigrates his co-host, Jalen Carter avoids suspension, Angel Reese doesn't, and the Philly Karen is in the house. That's my favorite topic of the night. Plus, more transgender in sports, this time a political race with President Trump weighing in. A UCLA quarterback is charged with a serious crime, and the sad story as an Olympic champion sells his medal and leaves the country. But before we begin, don't forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, where you can find this podcast, my other podcast, where I have California politics, national politics, as well as our other content. And follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. And my friends, if you're listening to this right now, please make sure you hit that thumbs up or like button. And after the podcast, I beg of you, share it. And with that out of the way, let's get right down to it. ESPN under fire for keeping Ryan Clark on the air after repeated outbursts when race baiting, ego, and unfiltered bias collide. Even ESPN's bosses are now beginning to squirm. So, first of all, hat tip to OutKick on this. It's part of Bobby Burak's work. He's been on top of Ryan Clark and others. He doesn't take the race baiting well. And I don't blame him. That's why I'm in this battle. I got involved in 2015 because I got tired of the race baiting. My grandmother, Afro-Caribbean, my cousins, that beautiful caramel color, my half-brother, Asian. I'm tired of this race baiting nonsense that's meant to separate us. It's driving our country apart. It's destroying us from within. And those, if you agree with it, I'll tell you what you are. You are the racist. And like Bobby Burak, I'm here to push back on your nonsense. So Ryan Clark's latest on-air meltdown, it's just another bad look. But it's also a pattern. And ESPN's refusal to act is becoming the story. When a commentator repeatedly insults colleagues, injects racial bias, and undermines the network credibility, well, the silence from the leadership becomes complicity, meaning ESPN itself is part of the problem here. Now, ESPN's top brass is finally facing pressure, not just from viewers, but their own employees. Many of them are saying enough. So what happened? Well, let's check out the video here.
Wake up this morning. Are you feeling okay? You look at A.J. Brown, which is this number one wide receiver who got one target all night, and then you got CeeDee Lamb.
But that's the
when was
but
the one
Trace,
target?
That's the target.
But
though.
I'm saying
when
like,
was the one
I'm
target?
I'm saying you could have it both ways.
54 seconds left in the game on 2nd and 11. It was the one target. He runs the out route.
You wake up this
the
morning saying
got
A.J. Brown is
right. It's gonna get you here in a second.
No, you know what you wake up saying though? A.J. Brown's team is 1-0.
Of course.
Right. Like,
I mean,
like
yes,
that's what
I get.
But the thing is this though, and. We shouldn't do this on TV, and so I apologize if people think this is rude. That's the non-player.
Oh, view. Stop. That's – no, that – CeeDee Lamb is
– let me tell you why. I'm not saying
– I'm not looking at fantasy football. Ryan, I'm not – don't belittle me like that. I could come in and say, as 3X players are saying one thing and give an alternative perspective, that maybe CeeDee Lamb did play well. And
Peter, what I need for you to do is not get mad and let me finish for one.
Okay, go on.
It wasn't about you. It was going to be about me.
Okay.
As a player, I can't speak for CeeDee Lamb. I'm speaking for me.
That guy's a disgusting human being. A disgusting human being. I'm sorry, people. That's exactly where am I at here? He doesn't belong on the air. He doesn't deserve that job. Let me be clear here. The fantasy sports industry elevated the sports world. We forced these beat reporters to start looking at the data, to start looking at the numbers. Then fantasy analysts like myself that transcended fantasy and was also an NFL analyst, I was able to combine the human element, the relationship element with the numbers. And I was good at it. So when I see this buffoon make that statement, then all he should be able to talk about is football and black culture. That's it. Anything else is off limits because it's not part of his world. You see what I'm getting at? It's stupid. He's stupid. And they paid this guy, Peter Schrager, some bucks to come over from the NFL Network to ESPN after 10 years at the NFL Network. And this is how a buffoon treats the new talent that they're hoping can elevate their show that has done decently but not great. Now, this exchange did spill off air, and it prompted Clark to issue a faux apology, public apology. Quote, I regret the interaction. I've taken accountability with ESPN leadership. No, he hasn't. He just dropped to his knees for 30 seconds and then went on his way not caring. Now, this follows a string of controversies with this nut job. In June, Clark race shamed Robert Griffin III over his interracial marriage, despite the fact that Ryan Clark has a half black, half white child from a girlfriend, I believe, or something like that. He's not attached to her anymore. He called Aaron Rodgers a fraud and refused to appear with Sage Steele due to her political views. Sage Steele, being black or half black, didn't agree with the little buffoon there. So thus, he refused to go on camera with her. Now, ESPN insiders, this is, again, per OutKick, say Clark is widely disliked internally, with producers and talent refusing to defend him publicly. This is on executive Jimmy Pitaro, Burke Magnus, and Dave Roberts, because they re-signed this idiot in 2023, despite the mounting backlash. Now, ESPN staffers told OutKick they're tired of Clark's impulse control issues and lack of professionalism. He recently mocked ESPN's top rated show, PTI, pardon the interruption, saying viewers shouldn't take Wilbon and Kornheiser seriously. This guy is not elevating ESPN like Bomani Jones and Jemele Hill. He's driving ratings down. Look, Clark's behavior isn't just abrasive. It's ideological, performative, and racially divisive. I personally believe Clark is a racist, period. How? Look at him on film, people. Look at him on film. And some believe ESPN's refusal to discipline him, well, that reflects institutional cowardice, and I agree. Let the man go. Some people do also think that ESPN's back is against the wall, and this is likely the first fracture that will eventually lead to his firing. I would agree to that. This Peter Schrager's well-liked, beloved by many. The following day, many came to his defense publicly. You didn't see people coming to Clark's defense at all. And without ESPN, he's nobody. But Bomani Jones has been forgotten, and Jemele Hill no longer has relevance. That's what happens when the network makes you and not the other way around. Both, and actually all three, have racial hatred for Anglos, and in many respects, America. And we're moving past them. He's digging his own grave. And Clark's selective aggression, this is where I agree with Bobby Burak. It's simply there to mock white colleagues while praising those like him. And that's wrong. Look, my friends, we have to come together as a country, as a nation. And people like Clark are dividing it. Now, people sit there and say, well, what are you doing, William? Bringing you the facts and pushing back. And reminded you, we, just like we did against the KKK to rid ourselves of those vile people, the Clarks of the world need to go as well. Oh yeah, I said it. He needs to go because he's dividing us through racial hatred because he's a racist. Look, this exposes the double standard the media won't touch. But as a conservative Latino, and a lot of my conservative black friends will tell you, we'll call it out for what it is, racism. His refusal to appear with Sage Steele, a black conservative, shows this is about race. And if you're not aligned with his belief, he won't recognize you. That's simply put, hatred towards other blacks and minorities who won't play the victim as he wants you to. And look, Latinos, Asians, blacks, they're all strong people. Those who play the victim card, well, they're not. And when you encourage everybody to do that, you are sitting there and removing what makes America strong, what makes our values strong. That's the rise above it all, the work hard. He's saying, now you're a victim. And here's the kicker. As an athlete, he had to rise above it to be able to play in the NFL. I never understood that. Why you work so hard for your career and then you tell others to play the victim. Had he played the victim, he would never have made it to the NFL. So why is he telling others to play the victim? Look, ESPN's leadership is paralyzed by identity politics because they're unwilling to hold Clark to the same standards they hold others. The network's credibility suffers every time Clark postures as a cultural critic when he should be a football analyst. Viewers are tuning out, colleagues are fed up, and ESPN silence is now louder than Clark's outburst. Look, Ryan Clark's latest blow-up isn't an isolated incident. It's a symptom of ESPN's deeper rot. The network rewards performative outrage, protects ideological bias, and punishes dissent that doesn't toe the party line. They do this despite the fact ratings keep failing, and Disney would like to rid themselves of this asset. But there are no buyers. Maybe there will be now that the NFL owns about 10% of it. But at the end of the day, Clark insults colleagues, injects race into everything, and undermines the very hires ESPN makes. Yet he stays on the air. This isn't about one analyst. It's about a media institution afraid to enforce standards. They'll only enforce standards on one culture. And that's wrong, too. You have to enforce standards across the board. It doesn't matter whether you're white, black, Latino, Asian, or whatnot. You don't follow the company policy, you get bleep canned or suspended. But they won't do that with Clark. ESPN's leadership needs to decide. Are they running a sports network or a culture war platform? Because if Clark stays, they're choosing chaos over credibility. And viewers aren't sticking around to watch that nonsense. All right, let's move on. Hey, Jalen Carter avoid suspension after spitting on Dak Prescott when sportsmanship becomes a PR slogan, not a standard. All right. The NFL says it's cracking down on unsportsmanlike conduct, then lets a player spit on a quarterback, a star quarterback, and walk away with a fine. Jalen Carter's ejection was immediate, but the league's response was anything but. I mean, to a man, to all y'all out there that don't understand, spitting is one of the lowest forms you can do. That's fighting. Somebody spits on you, it doesn't matter if he's bigger, you're going to get your tail beat. You don't let that go. When zero tolerance becomes context matters, fans start asking, what do the rules really mean? So what happened? Let's check out what happened here. Let's cue it up here. Here we go.
Offensive lineman, and Dak spits down towards the ground, but in the direction of the Eagles with Carter, who had walked over there, and that begins the interaction of the two. Prescott's spit was down. Carter was...
You see that? Dak was just spitting. And Jalen Carter went and spit in his face, or spit on his body. He was ejected 6 seconds into the season opener. So look, this incident occurred after a so-called verbal exchange, and it was clearly captured on broadcast footage. Carter's ejection came before the Cowboys offense even ran a play. Now, the Eagles went on to win 24-20. This was a terrible start for the league. But I'll tell you, Sunday games blew everything out of the water, and that Sunday night game between the Bills and the Ravens, you're like, whoa, man. You know, so this was quickly drowned out. But my issue is the news that came out going into recording tonight, they are not going to suspend him. Post-game, Carter apologized. It was a mistake that happened on my side, and it just won't happen again. I feel bad for my teammates and the fans out there. No, he doesn't. It's like, brah, you got to go out there and apologize. Okay. So supposedly NFL insiders are confirming that Carter will not be suspended, but will likely face a substantial fine. He needs to be suspended. Now, Prescott gave his version. He was intel to me. I wouldn't spit on somebody. I'm damn sure I'm not trying to spit on you, unquote. Prescott said he was spitting away from his lineman, and Carter misinterpreted, leading to the retaliation. Quote, he just spit on me in that moment. It was more of a surprise than anything, unquote. Now, the NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported the league is reviewing the incident and may consider additional discipline for either player. Prescott did nothing. But Carter needs to be not only fined massively, he needs to be suspended for 3 games. That is the lowest of the low. You don't do that. That's a machismo thing. Well, maybe not 3 games. At least, yeah, I say 3 games total. They kicked him out of that. Count that as 1 and 2 more games. I guarantee you there will not be any spitting anymore. So why am I angry here? Well, the NFL preaches zero tolerance for conduct that demeans the game. Carter's an important piece of the Eagles team. He spit on the quarterback. Now all of a sudden, that's a teachable moment. Really? I need to learn, be taught. You don't spit on somebody? No, that's not a teachable moment. And then Troy Vincent told owners in spring of 2025, he's part of the NFLPA and a liaison, I believe, that sportsmanship is a top priority. Carter's case show enforcement is selective. If the league wants to protect its brand, it can't let high-profile players dodge real consequences. This is what I call cultural decay in professional sports. Spitting on an opponent used to be a line you didn't cross. Now it's a fine and a press release. This decision by the NFL, what it does, it sends a message. Decorum is optional if you're talented enough. Now, fans see this. We're not dumb. The rules aren't about respect. They're about optics, meaning they're just there for us to think something's going to happen when it's not. And again, Carter's apology was not sincere. He was just too stupid to realize it would be caught on camera. And that's what he regrets. Now, the media frames this as a moment of growth, but the real story is institutional leniency again. I don't know. Jalen Carter spit on Dak Prescott and got ejected but not suspended. And the NFL says it values sportsmanship. This action of no suspension says otherwise. And this isn't about one player. It's about a league that's inconsistent with rules except for one. The stars get away with everything. Carter's apology, again, was not sincere, and the league's response is weak. We as fans, we deserve better than selective enforcement. It's why everybody thought the season was fixed last year for the Chiefs. Even players were like, and coaches were like, damn. Oh, man. If the NFL wants to protect its brand, it needs to start protecting its principles and enforcing its rules seriously. All right, my friends. Let me show you what I got here. This is pretty cool. This is our classic mug. We have swag in our store now. We have a store. This is some of the swag. It's one of our, I love this. I got mine here already. Well, you can't tell with the mirror. I'm supposed to be looked at. That's odd. Big 15-ouncer. We are an all-volunteer project here, so I would greatly appreciate it if you would help support us by purchasing some swag. My partner and I, we put a lot into this and we get nothing out of it, but we're doing it because we love it. So let's move on. I'll keep that up there. Oh, I'm sorry. You can swipe the QR code and it'll take you to our store, or you can just go to grumblingsmedia.com. All right, next story. Angel Reese bench after on-court blow-up and locker room meltdown. The WNBA's rising star is burning bridges faster than she builds them. I wouldn't call her a rising star. She's a media-generated star. Without the media, she's nobody. They needed somebody to go against Caitlin Clark because of all the support Caitlin Clark is and the love she's getting, and the former Black great players aren't liking the fact that a little white girl is playing, running rings around them. And that's not me who has said that. That's what NBA players are saying. Kind of sad. You know, I was all into the NBA one for sure because I'm like, hey, maybe this is like when Bird and Magic, and I became a fan of the NBA for many years. Not anymore, but at the time I did. But then I started watching WWE and like, oh God, I can't deal with these women. And then the product was nasty, nasty, nasty. Why? Because it's mediocre play. And then the boys, 15-year-old boys, whether it's WNBA, whether it's American soccer team or any soccer team, 15-year-old boys destroy them. And that's when I started realizing, God, I love watching Caitlin because she actually played at an NBA level in certain ways. But then the rest of the league was just nasty to watch. It was like watching a junior high team where the scrubs are on one side and you're trying to see, is there any talent there that we can maybe move up the JV? I mean, that's how bad the product is. Anyway, I'm digressing. Angel Reese is supposed to be the WNBA's breakout star per the media. But she's not, and now she's sidelined for swinging at an opponent and torching her own locker room. Look, the WNBA, like other leagues, oh, we're about accountability. Look, but if Angel Reese is what I call a player who's starting to unravel under the pressure. She's built herself up to this. The media builds her up. But then the product we get from her on the court is nothing like what we're hearing in the press and from her. She denigrated her teammates, saying they sucked, in essence, saying she didn't want to be with the Sky if they weren't going to get better players or great players. Her teammates say they're over it. But they're not defending her. They're distancing themselves and showing they've had it with her. So what happened? Last week, Reese received her 8th technical foul of the season after backhanding, I want to say Elijah Edwards, or was it Boston? I can't remember. But it was during a rebound battle. And the foul triggered an automatic 1-game suspension under WNBA rules. Days earlier, Reese gave a scorched earth interview to the Chicago Tribune, criticizing the Sky's front office, threatening the league, unless they sign great players. So you get the foul, which reminds everybody how bad a player she is and how dirty a player she is, and then the article comes out about how she views her team as being nothing but a pathetic buffoons from the front office of her co-players. She also targeted injured veteran Courtney Vandersloot, saying, quote, "We can't rely on Courtney to come back at the age that she's at," unquote. Now, some of the teammates responded, Rachel Benham, "I think I just don't really care. I'm so over all this bleep. If I was younger, it would have affected me more, but I'm grown and I just don't care." So that reflects that I've had it with her. That's frustration. Now, some took a diplomatic approach. Ariel Atkins, it was simply out of respect for everybody in the room, 1 through 12. Ariel, get off your knees for Angel. She said, you suck. Now, the Sky suspended Reese for the first half of a game against the Las Vegas Aces, citing statements detrimental to the team. Y'all stupid. Maybe she is right up at the front office. Y'all stupid. She just bleep slapped you and y'all took it. Man, now the head coach called the suspension an organizational decision. I mean, see, this is why they do that. This is a front office and a coaching staff that won't even stand up for themselves after a player belittles you. Okay, so she struck Washington's Elijah Edwards in the head with a backhander in a rebound battle. Yeah, I saw the video, and I hear Elijah, I thought it was Boston, just instinctively. But that was her 8th technical foul of the season. Now, they said the contact was not incidental. You know, and I kind of looked at it. I thought maybe a little ticky, but the way she swung it, it's like she didn't work hard to stop it and just purposely let it go. Oh, yeah, I got away with one. That's the type of player she is. She leads the league in technical fouls, so I'll take my chances on me being right. She's reckless. She's aggressive. She's a dirty player and doesn't care. Now, the WNBA didn't label her a dirty player, but the accumulation of tats and the nature of the foul, it speaks for itself. Now, fans' analysis called the move cheap, unnecessary, and unsportsmanlike. And she hasn't publicly apologized or acknowledged the foul. Again, she has no account. She lacks accountability. She has no humility. She won't look in the mirror. Now, the suspension has come and gone. This is a weekly podcast, so it's a story I put in the queue. But this wasn't a one-off. It was the latest in the pattern that's turning Reese from somebody who people looked at could be a star into a liability. I think it's a matter of time before she's out of the league. Why? Because she's not very good. She's a one-trick pony, rebounds. Now, her rise, people know her because of the mainstream media and LGBTQ supporters. They wanted to counter to Caitlin Clark's meteoric rise. Reese now can't hide the fact she's just not a good person. She's selfish, egotistical. And her implosion, well, that's self-inflicted. Look, the WNBA wants personalities other than Clark, but only because of the jealousy and envy they see happening because of Clark. They're like, we got to prop up some of these other players because we can't just prop up Clark. And they shouldn't. But they're not propping up other great players. They're letting the Monica McNutts, the bigots of the world, determine who the WNBA supports and doesn't support. And that's sickening and disgusting. Rebecca Lobo and other analysts on there can't make a comment without getting attacked because it has to all be pro-LGBTQ or pro-black and anti-white. And another problem, oh my God, the refereeing is disgustingly bad in that league. It's a mess. And when Clark's not playing, nobody's watching. The league's going about this the wrong way. They're elevating the wrong people. This isn't just about one foul. It's about a pattern of entitlement, deflection, and culture decay. Not just with Reese, but with the old guard. Reese has no self-awareness. She doesn't care about consequences because excuses have been made for her whole life. Calling out teammates, threatening exits, and blaming the media spin and then fans. And don't quote me. I know it's been once or twice, maybe up to three times, where she's played the race card. They've investigated. They found nothing. The Sky's half-game suspension, that's just PR damage control. That's no discipline. And the league markets Reese as a role model? Her behavior is fracturing the team culture in Chicago, and it undermines any credibility the WNBA is trying to build. The truth is, she is helping to continue to make the WNBA look like a joke and a laughingstock. To be truthful, there's only a handful of players taken seriously, and the only player anyone knows is Clark. The locker room's already lost in Chicago, and the league's insistence on elevating a bad player, that also makes the league a running joke. Look, Angel Reese didn't just get benched for demeaning her players. Again, she detonated her own brand. The WNBA wants stars to elevate the game, but Reese embarrasses the game, the league, and the brand. The problem is now it's so blatant, and yet the league still won't act, not just with her, but with other players. And we as a public, we're saying we don't want to watch this train wreck. We want to watch this. We'll go watch roller derby. We'll go watch WWE. That's how bad this has gotten. Her teammates are done with her. Her coach is dodging. And the league is praying we forget about how bad a person she is. This is what you call a cautionary tale. And normally we would say, look, talent doesn't excuse toxicity here. And she should be punished. However, the big difference is she's not talented. She's just toxic. She has one skill again, rebounding. Reese doesn't have the capacity to have humility nor accountability, and it's going to get worse with her, and she'll continue to blame the world instead of looking in the mirror. Let's move on. Philly's Karen meltdown over the home run ball sparks a national outrage. When entitlement meets a child's birthday, the internet doesn't forgive. All right, so what am I talking about here? Well, a father got a home run ball before Karen got it. And he got it, gave it to his son. It was his birthday. And this woman, this Karen in Philly's gear, storms in, demands it, and walks away with it. The internet dubbed her Philly's Karen. And the backlash was instant, brutal, and global, and well-deserved. When grown adults snatch joy from children, the crowd doesn't stay silent, and neither does the culture. So what am I talking about? Let us check it out, my friends. Ooh, I got the videos rolling today, huh? Ooh, let's get it going. So here's the play. He's in this stuff. Look at his reaction. It's a kid's birthday. The father did nothing wrong, and he allowed himself to be bullied by a loser excuse of a woman. I'd hate to be that woman. So this was a home run ball hit by Harrison Bader. It was the left field stands. Now the father there is Drew Feltwell. He was attending with his wife and two kids. He caught the ball, gave it to his son Lincoln, who was celebrating his birthday. Then Karen, the woman in the Phillies jersey, approached, screamed, "Live my ball! Live my ball!" What's the matter? Your husband doesn't have enough balls here to satisfy you? And she demanded Feltwell hand it over. Now, Feltwell, playing the pajama boy role better than any Hollywood actor, took the ball from his son and gave it to her. He said, "I had a fork in the road. Either do something I'd regret or be dad and show him how to de-escalate." No, Feltwell, you showed your dad, your son, how to be a duck with a C. Now, the son said, "I wasn't very happy that we had to give it up to her, but we can't win." Why? That's because daddy told him. Daddy's raising a weak child. Now, the woman was booed by the crowd and she flipped them off. At least she has some big, she's got bigger cojones than Feltwell. She flipped the crowd off like, "I don't care." Which is true. She did it. So the video went viral. TikTok, X, Facebook. And again, she was dubbed Phillies Karen. Now, they tried to find out who she is, and they misidentified these poor women. One woman came out who's misidentified and said, "Oh, I wish I was that thin and could move that quick." Oh, there was a Cheryl Richardson Wagner and there's Leslie Ann Kravitz, and neither one of those two women people are the Karen, so leave them alone. And then Hamilton School District issued a statement confirming that neither woman worked for them, but took a shot at the Phillies Karen as well. I guess they said one of the two women they identified worked at the school. So even the school came out and said, "Nah, they don't." But they took a shot at the Phillies Karen. She is America's number one enemy right now. Now, MLB and Harrison Bader did step in. Lincoln received a signed bat, and he got swag from the Marlins, a swag bag. So good for them. Good for them. This wasn't just a viral moment. It was a cultural flashpoint. A grown woman snatched a birthday gift from a child. And the crowd is the one that intervened, not the father. The media downplayed the entitlement, of course. They protect and love Karens. But the public didn't, thank goodness. The Karen label stuck because it fit. Aggressive, self-centered, and blind to context. I got to be honest, as a Latino, I saw it firsthand. And I hear it a lot in the brown community and the black community. You know, she is your typical progressive white suburban woman. Sad but true. Look, the father chose restraint over confrontation. It's what I call a pajama boy move when he should have stood his ground. Look, instead he acted like a woman when masculinity and standing up for yourself and family was needed. The ball didn't belong to the Karen, but to whomever got to it first, and he got to it first. He allowed himself to be bullied and showed cowardice when strength was needed. And that's the honest take. Now, the internet's response wasn't just about the ball. It was about defending childhood joy from adult narcissism. That was the part B of it. I can see that. You know, I don't think that has nothing to do with the point of what happened, but I'm not going to argue that point either. Now, the false identification, this is what happens when mob rules. Let me tell you something about how mob rules. Well, we got to take care of it ourselves. What happens? You get BLM, murders, billions in property damage, violence. You get Occupy Wall Street, rapes. In Brazil, you get murders because I misidentify the wrong guy because the girl accuses him. So, yeah, mob rule doesn't work neither. And MLB's response, that's a rare win, restoring dignity to the joy and showing that institutions can still do the right thing. Look, the Phillies Karen saga wasn't about baseball. It was about entitlement, cowardice, and the erosion of masculine instinct. A grown woman snatched a birthday gift from a child. Come on, man. And the father stood down when he should have stood up. That wasn't grace. It was weakness. The crowd had to intervene because the man wouldn't. The media downplayed it, but the public didn't. Thank goodness. And the Karen label stuck. The ball didn't belong to her. It belonged to the boy, and someone should have said so out loud and in real time. All right, let me show you my favorite shirt, my favorite swag out of our store. It's because I'm conservative and I'm a Latino, and I used to have TDS in 2015, but in 2016, I became one of Trump's biggest supporters. Latinos for Trump t-shirt, man. ¿Quién es el más macho? El presidente. El jefe. Trump. Again, we are an all-volunteer project here. Your support will be wonderful. Swipe the code or head on over to grumblingsmedia.com. Okay, a few more stories here before we close out the show. Trump slams Spamberger, the Democrat Virginia governor candidate, over transgender policy support. Why? She's with the Democrats. She backs boys and girls spaces. So President Trump called out Virginia Democrat Abigail Spamberger for backing policies that allow biological males in girls' bathrooms and sports. Allows them to watch young girls dress. These are disgusting excuses for human beings. They're weak. Weak boys. There's some kind of, I forget what it's called, a system where these boys love to dress up as women and they get off on it. That's what I think is 90% of the stuff, and that's what the stat says. Look, this issue isn't just about policy. It's parental rights, child safety, and the cultural line Democrats keep crossing that I call rot. When the left prioritizes ideology over biology, well, voters are starting to draw their own boundaries. We're seeing more and more of these individuals become Republicans. So what happened? Trump spoke from the Oval Office after signing an executive order restoring the Department of Defense's original name, the Department of War. So at that time, he chose to criticize Spamberger for supporting men playing in women's sports and using women's bathrooms. And he's right. He said they suffer from Trump derangement syndrome and they've gone crazy and they've abandoned working class values. He's absolutely right. Now, Glenn Youngkin, current governor, and the candidate, Winsome Earl Sears, a strong black woman who was or is lieutenant governor. She's running for governor. And she supports, and he supports them because they're opposing radical gender policies. Now, the candidate, Earl Sears, echoed Trump's criticism. And, of course, she's going to come out and say, yeah, she supports, her opponent supports girls sharing locker rooms with naked men. And she's turned Virginia into a sanctuary for violent criminals. Yes, Spanger has done that. Now, her campaign, Spanger's campaign, refused to directly answer whether she supports gender identity-based bathroom and sports policy, but she does. The silence is the answer. Then she lies by issuing this vague, Abigail is a mom of three kids in Virginia public schools. She believes parents have the right to make decisions about what is best for their children. She says a complete lie. She wants to tell you as your parent, no, your girl better is going to watch that boy undress and going to watch his schlong. Woo, woo, woo. And she's going to like it. So she's a damn liar, believes parents have the right to make decisions. She wants to make the decision for you. Look, Trump's attack on Spamberger wasn't just political. It was parental. When Democrats push boys into girls' spaces, they lose the middle and they lose the moms, as they should. Her dodge, Spamberger's dodge, says it all. She won't defend the policy, but she won't reject it either. Ergo, she defends the policy. It tells us where she stands. She's okay with perverts watching young girls dress and boys beating on girls in athletics. Earl Sears is drawing a hard line, and that's who you should vote for, Virginia. Hopefully you're listening. This race isn't about party. It's about protecting daughters from ideological overreach. And if Democrats keep choosing perversion over accountability, hopefully they'll keep losing ground where it matters most, the family, and, of course, the vote. All right, so some terrible news here. UCLA quarterback was arrested before kickoff. So UCLA's backup quarterback transfer, Pierce Clarkson, was arrested on felony charges hours before kickoff. The university suspended him immediately, but the arrest exposed a deeper problem. Elite athletes again have no clue as to responsibility or accountability until it's too late. He's the case study in what happens when talent is elevated above accountability. Again, let me tell you, players have told me this and agents. I used to be heavily involved from 1996, I want to say, until 2010 or 2012, 15, maybe right around there, in the NFL. Talking, interviewing, all that, everything across the board. So what, and they've all told me that when a player's skill is discovered at a young age, they're never told no, and everything they do that's wrong or bad or illegal is covered up. Eventually, you get to a point you can't do that anymore, and that starts with college now. Clarkson was arrested in L.A. for felony assault with a deadly weapon. Bail was set at $30,000. He was released the same day. So the weapon wasn't a firearm, but it was still a deadly weapon. UCLA again suspended Clarkson indefinitely. Now, he hadn't played a single down so far this season, and he was expected to back up Nico Iamlaav, the guy who transferred from Tennessee. His court date's in October, early October. UCLA is aware from the charges that came out and publicly stated that. It's going to be evaluated by UCLA Office of Student Conduct. Look, this guy's toast in terms of what we know so far. But look, this isn't about football. It's about a culture that shields talent from consequences. And by shielding him, he did this without thinking twice because he's always been shielded. He's part of a generation of elite athletes raised on praise, protected from discipline, and rarely told no. Now, UCLA did the right thing by suspending him immediately. But it shouldn't take felony charges to trigger accountability. Look, we have to teach responsibility with accountability. Until society does this, these stories will continue and worsen. And I believe eventually we'll see murder one facing the student athlete who'll even then scream about being the victim. Something's gone wrong with our values in our raising of children. And it's clear when you see so many athletes in trouble now, I just did an episode last week with about four tales of athletes just doing stupid stuff from domestic breaking and entering to allowing a potential murderer into their dorms to live. I mean, just some terrible stuff. Talent must never be a shield from responsibility, and institutions must stop pretending it is. All right. Let's get to our final story of the night. Olympic legend auctions off gold medals and leaves USA for good. So Greg Louganis. Where'd it go? Oops. So Greg Louganis, I assume it was El Cajon. That's where he's from, is El Cajon. And he was an Olympic diver, multiple gold medals. I believe he's got a silver as well. He was once the embodiment of American athletic greatness. I think it was back in the 80s, I want to say, Olympics right around there. He now sells off his medals and leaves the country. And it kind of reminds us of how fragile legacy can be when fame fades and support systems fail. Now, the headlines have focused on him reinventing himself, looking for spirituality, but the subtext is quiet heartbreak. This isn't a scandal. It's a cautionary tale for every athlete. I guess every athlete, if you think the spotlight's going to last forever, it doesn't. So Olympic diver Greg Louganis announced via Facebook that he sold three of his medals and his California home to fund a move to Panama. Two gold medals and one silver for about $437,000. And he gave away or sold most of his possessions, saying he wanted to live with less and start over. His move is to Panama, my home country. And it's a great place for him to move. It's very cosmopolitan, very Americanized. I'll probably send him a post, a message saying, you know, here's some of my family numbers. Because everything I've read about him throughout the years, good guy. Now, his move to Panama was framed as a personal reset. Quote, now I get to discover who is Greg Louganis without the distraction and noise from outside, unquote. I don't know. I think this is cautionary tale for athletes. Louganis' story is a sobering reminder that Olympic glory doesn't guarantee lifelong security. Athletes often peak young, but the financial and emotional challenges come later when the cameras are gone. And that seems to have been the case here. Fame fades, people. Bills don't. Never forget that. The way he had to sell this to fund this trip tells me he's a working class guy. Wasn't able to quite capitalize or save from the fame. I mean, he had commercials. He had endorsements and all that. So This isn't about politics. It's about planning, support, and the reality that legacy alone, that's right, legacy alone doesn't pay the mortgage, people. Now, his move abroad may be framed as spiritual, but it's also a retreat from a system that allows greatness and riches, yet doesn't teach to save for your retirement. The truth is, our system in America teaches that it's okay to be in debt, but the bills will eventually demand payment, and retirement doesn't come without monetary savings. Luganus didn't just sell his medals. He sold the illusion that athletic greatness guarantees stability. This is painfully familiar to anyone who's watched heroes fade into hardship. We see in it, especially with boxers, ex-NFL players from years bygone. So, if we're being honest, this is, to me, it's a sad story, but it's also a warning. And there you have it, my friends. Before we go, make sure you hit like or thumbs up and share this podcast. Then bookmark grumblingsmedia.com where you can check out my Fired Up California. That's where I give you conservative political talk as well as my culture podcast, The Red, White, and Rude. Again, grumblingsmedia.com, and you can catch your swag there too. The t-shirt, the mug, we have hats as well. Then follow us on your favorite platform, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, or Pandora under the profile handle Grumblings Media. Until next week, this is William Del Pilar, 4 points on the board, Grumbling Media's longest running show. Stay safe, and I hope your fantasy team had a great week one.